This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Mark Reardon.
There's all these new words that are just meant to keep one person from disagreeing with another person's position.
And you have to be pithy. What do I mean by pithy? How about this? Republicans want to kill your kids.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Man, it feels like spring. Does it not feel like spring right now?
It totally does.
It's not spring, though. It's still winter.
Oh, yeah.
But it feels like spring. And here's maybe even some better news. Let's flash forward to next Monday when it will be an hour lighter.
Yes.
When we sign off the air at 6 o'clock, we're going to have sunlight until about 7:30.
Oh, Mark.
So that's kind of my focus right now.
Yes.
How is everyone? Fred, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
The Hall of Famer is here. He's getting ready for his big trip to Japan. So we've been talking about that. Marie, his wife, has got all kinds of planning going on. There needs to be some
sort
of journal.
About it.
Is there going to be a daily journal from Japan, Fred, or a blog post or something?
What do you think?
Oh, don't give me something else to do.
Poor Fred has been assigned to purchase certain items of clothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a little overwhelming.
Well, I was trying to get him to go for the better quality rain jacket, because like I have the Patagonia rain jacket.
I am with you on that.
And he told me that's talent budget, not executive producer budget.
That's right.
But
that's,
if you go with the nice one, it'll last you. I'm telling you, they last forever until you lose it, which I think I lost one of mine. But if you don't lose it, it'll last forever. By the way, when do you leave? When do I need to get some sick days in here pretty quick. So when you're leaving, I'm probably out of here too, Fred. Let's coordinate that right now.
Sometime around the 15th.
Okay, so we got a couple of weeks.
Mid-March.
We do have a couple of weeks. Well, hopefully everyone had a good weekend. I got a lot of stuff done around the house. But here's one thing. I'm just going to start with this because, Sue, I think you'll find this interesting. And it does affect, you know, I have this tendency to make everything about myself. I'm pretty good at that. But this affects maybe a few more people than myself. And I just thought it was interesting and maybe relatable from a government malfunction viewpoint. So, Sue, as you know, and I'm going to try to walk people through the geography of this as best I can, because if you're not familiar with this area, it'd be like me going up to North County. I don't know that area at all. You know, I really don't.
Right.
Every once in a while, I'm like, wow, this is a completely new world up here. So if you're from there, you probably don't go to South County. You don't go to where I live or vice versa. If you're in South County, maybe you don't go to West County. I mean, I don't even think people in West County allow people from other counties if I'm, you know, checking that. So as you know, Sue, I always talk about this road near my house, near Krause Farms. There's two horse farms. Twisty Turney. It's Hillsborough Road. So if you go down 44, you exit at 141, and you go south, not north, it'll loop you under the highway, and there's a Drury in there and a Sugar Fire and a Fastlane gas station. If you take the right there, you kind of wind on back to Hillsborough Road where the horse farms are. So I've known in my neighborhood, and the people in our area have known for a couple years, that they were going to do some renovations to Hillsborough Road. In fact, you might remember it was supposed to start a year ago, and I was very curious at the time because this is American Rescue Plan money, is my understanding. So this our taxpayer dollars. It's certainly a road that needs to be fixed. Nothing happened last year, and it was supposed to start in the spring. So because I'm a busybody, of course, you'd admit that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I emailed the mayor of Valley Park and I said, hey, can you just kind of give me an update? Because I was kind of curious about, wait a second, this money has been allocated. It's just like a lot of what's happening in the city right now. Why is it not being used? So she didn't respond. And then finally, I sent another one, might have been a little snarky, saying, I understand being the mayor of Valley Park is a pretty important job, but can you just take 30 seconds to answer my question? Well, then she has an attorney from the city call me. And I think they're probably worried that I'm going to do this on the air, which I pretty much was, but I was also calling for my own, well,
just
you know what it was.
Just your own curiosity.
Right. But so then they're like, oh, the pain in the ass radio guy's calling, right? And they know who I am. So the lawyer's really nice and he explains. And what I remember is there was some permitting, bureaucracy, blah, blah, blah issues, and they couldn't get it done. But they had it kind of started in the spring, I think because of the school buses, right? So last week, the signs go up around our neighborhood that say Hillsborough Road closing down on March 5th.
Right.
So, slight problem. Guess who they didn't tell? Nobody. But guess who they really didn't tell? The schools. So, we all knew from, like, the people, and for those of you in Valley Park government, I think this is on you. They didn't go to the homeowners associations of the neighborhoods that are affected. They didn't go to Rockwood. So, Becky rolls up this morning with my daughter. We take her to school most days. It's kind of a, you know, quick trip. And not going to be so quick anymore. And she talked to the principal at our school. No clue. No clue that this was happening in 2 days. So this is pretty much a big headache, Sue, because there is another way out of the neighborhood. You have to go to Gravois and then circle back around.
I wondered if you were doing the Gravois thing.
You have to. There's no other way to do it.
I couldn't think of anything else off the top of my head that would...
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Right?
But see, here's what's going to happen. Hundreds and hundreds of people from my area will now have to go out that way. So think about it at 7:38 in the morning.
Oh.
All these kids are going to high school. The buses are trying to go to high school. Oh. Now you have more traffic. You're going to be reporting about this.
Yeah.
On, you know... On Gravois, there's a light at Little Brendan that's probably not long enough. There's other lights that they'll have to adjust. So none of this, in my mind, has been addressed or taken care of. I can't even imagine what the officials in the Rockwood School District are doing because Summit is affected, Stanton Elementary, Rockwood Middle School. There's a handful of schools that are affected here, and I guess nobody thought to reach out to the schools and say, hey, you might want to plan for this.
How do you know they haven't? Have you talked to somebody at the school?
I know they haven't. Yes,
okay.
Because my principal was not... The principal at my daughter's school had no clue. We checked with the high school. Our neighbor has a son and daughter in high school. The high school did not know.
How is
that possible? So someone at Valley Park who was supposed to be doing their job. Now, here's what I'm thinking. I don't even know if you can do something like this. But you know what I wanted to do this morning? It's a litigious society. Let's sue them or something like that. See if we can stop this damn project.
No. I think they were probably thinking, well, we've put up the signs. Those who drive the road will see the signs and know that it's coming up.
Yeah. But Sue, again, it's not me. It's the school district should have been notified.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And really, there's a lot. There's the mail. I wonder if the United States Postal Service was
do you get
or
any
Amazon.
Anywhere? Do you get any mail anyway? My friend at Kirkwood says she only now gets it on Saturday.
Okay, well, my position on the Postal Service would be we don't need it, okay? Maybe twice a week or something like that, or once a week, I'm fine. So I'm not that worried about that, but
you're right about
Amazon
the
will be affected by this, FedEx will be affected. I don't know how that works. Now, I understand that, you know, apparently they can't fix this road without closing it down completely, but I'm trying to focus on two things. I told Fred this earlier. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. One, I'm not the only one affected. There's hundreds, if not there's thousands of people that are affected, right? So not just me. Two, when all is said and done, when my daughter drives a car in 5 years, which is kind of hard for me to believe, it will be a safe road. It's not
a
safe
road.
It's not a safe road.
You're absolutely right.
How long will this take?
Well, see, that's like they say 200 days.
They do.
I'm not good at math, but that's 6 months, isn't it?
It's a long time, yes.
What if it's the same damn contractor that's doing 55 in South County? Then it'll be like 3 years.
Yeah, that join the club. Then.
Right, exactly. Well, no, I know. You know the pain.
Oh, it's horrible. They do say that Krause Farms is accessible during this time, which is another concern.
So what's going to happen is that for the first part of the plan, Krause Farms will be accessible from the direction where I live. So you'd have to come from Gravois. This is my understanding. For the second part of it, they will open it from the other way. So you'll be able to get in from Merrimack Station, but you'll have to stop right where the horse farms are. So you won't be able to get through to... Now, there's like one... This is one thing that's interesting. There's one house in the middle of where the horse farms are and where I live. You got to go... Like, this person paved... A huge hill, Huge. Wow. I mean, it's probably a 12% grade. It's really, if not more, super steep. What do they do?
That's talent money, Fred. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. I might have to take helicopter out of that neighborhood. Anyway, I've spent a little bit too much time on this, but I do think it's an interesting situation. It's just, you know, it's just one I'm going to have to put up with. It's going to add some time to the day. You're going to hear me bitching about it on a regular basis, Sue. I just want to warn the audience that there's going to be a bitch fest about this for months to come, and then I'll finally, you know, breathe a sigh of
relief. Remember when they closed down 6440 and we all thought it was the end of the world?
Yes.
And it turned out to be, it was a pain.
Yeah.
But we survived.
Here's the difference. I didn't live right there in Dogtown.
And Fred,
I mean, I'm just saying.
You're right.
You know what they call this? They call it traffic mitigation. So what you do is, and this is what we're all going to have to do, you have to figure out different ways to get from point A to point B. And people figure it out. And there are ways. But when you're adding hundreds of cars to the traffic flow
that were going
in two directions, and now they're only going in one direction.
Delays.
That's going to be a challenge.
Staggered time.
Luckily, I don't really have to get up in the morning, and you know, I can kind of roll into it. And I think I get put in a better situation than a lot of people who have to go to work in the morning. You know, at 7 or 7:30.
Oh, for sure you do.
That will get the worst of it. Yeah, Fred, do you have something else? You look like you wanted to say something.
I was going to say, so that's going to really mess up then Alexa taking the bus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to make her take the bus now because my round trip's going to be longer. She probably won't like that. I timed it out this morning. I got curious. It was 8 minutes to go, so that would be 16 minutes round trip, and then it's 12 minutes, so it's 13 minutes. It's 5 extra minutes, which is 10 on the round trip. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But that's with no traffic.
Yeah. It's going to be different. You're right. At 7 o'clock in the morning or whenever you go.
Yeah. We're just going to have to deal with it. I had Wiggins create something. Let's see if this works. You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go.
And now, this Doge update.
I mean, whoa.
On the Mark Reardon Show.
I like the whoa. Well, let's hear that again.
Wait, I missed that.
Hold on. You got to hear the whoa part here.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
And now, this Doge update.
I mean, whoa.
On the Mark Reardon Show.
All right, I think we'll go with that. All right, you tell me, Sue, because I'm going to go to the source here. I did not take the time. I meant to, but really, I didn't have the time over the weekend to listen to Elon Musk and Joe Rogan. We had some of this. Guess who? Did I play this? I think I played it for Audio Cut of the Day. Friday afternoon, I'm doing the show, and guess who sends me a clip because he's being talked about on the Rogan Elon Musk podcast?
Jennings.
Jennings does, right. Something, Fred, I'm telling you, we're going to have to do an intervention on the ego thing. I'm very worried about it right now. But you listen to the whole thing, Sue.
Oh, I'm about three quarters of the way through. It is eye-opening, but it's great because it's Elon himself telling you exactly what's happening. And Joe Rogan will take you through all sorts of things, what's happening with Doge, the incredible stuff that they're uncovering, and just how things, part of how people have been able to scam the government itself all these years is because if you're of that mindset, he said branches or pieces of the government do not speak to one another electronically. So if Fred passes away and his social security number is still active, somebody in another thing that where he's getting disability doesn't realize that he's passed away. So those payments still go. And this is to the tune of hundreds of millions
and possibly billions
of dollars.
Exactly. All right. So a few clips from the podcast with Joe Rogan and Elon Musk.
A bunch of the things that Doge is fixing were identified by the Government Accountability Office many years ago. Like the fact that there's like 20 million people who are marked as alive in the Social Security database. It's more than I think the GAO first identified that in 2018.
So I think part of the point there is, look, this is stuff that a lot of people should be able to agree on when it comes to exposing and getting rid of it. But because of the politics, they just want to point to him.
Doge is a threat to the bureaucracy. It's the first threat to the bureaucracy. Normally, the bureaucracy eats revolutions for breakfast. This is the first time that they're not, that the revolution might actually succeed, that we could restore power to the people instead of power to the bureaucracy.
So, you know, I had a couple interesting conversations over the weekend with some people who are not on my side of politics. And I think that one dynamic that is at play right now with, we'll just call them the way that they're kind of broken down in the presidential polling is the white educated, you know, Americans, the chattering class, the ruling class. Batyanga Sargon will talk about them. She's coming up this afternoon. She's great talking about this stuff. They don't really understand that, and I firmly believe this, they don't really get that Most normal Americans are kind of done with this stuff. And, you know, the educated folks are the ones that are going to say, oh, what did Trump do here? He's kissing up to Putin. We need to save Ukraine because there were promises that were made. What are we doing? Kowtowing to the enemy here, all this stuff. But there's an unwillingness on the part of many people on the left. And I'm talking about not on the extreme side, right? I think the people, and they're being influenced by CNN and the rest of the media, the way that they're controlling the narrative, as they always do. But there's an unwillingness to understand how many people support this?
Yes.
Like, and how many people really think this is a good idea? The other thing that's really, really apparent to me is that they have complete and total amnesia about the last 3.5 years, which I guess kind of matches up because Joe Biden doesn't remember the last 3.5 years anyway. So the people that support him don't remember it either. I mean, are you kidding me? That I don't know if this was touched over the weekend. I really don't know if the Jake Tapper story was touched. I didn't see that it was. But that the guy that was in complete denial months into Kamala Harris's campaign, it's not like he just turned this around in July when Biden got out. He thought that any talk of any kind of mental deficiency with our former president was just outrageous, that you didn't have the capability, Laura Trump and others, to diagnose this. What are you talking about? And then he writes a book with this guy, Alex Thompson, about that very topic. That's unbelievable. And how you can't address the issue of what happened, or what really the focus should be on, what didn't happen in the White House for the last 3.5 years. I don't think I shared this audio last week, but KJP, Fred, KJP's out there doing like a symposium or something like
good
that,
grief,
saying that she thought that the Democrats really right. treated her boss unfairly.
She said it was a firing squad.
Right. So there's delusion, and then there's unbelievable delusion. I mean, how you can sit in a spot and not understand that one of the main reasons that he was taken off the ticket is because he barely could get any words out. I mean, that should be even more apparent in the last couple of months, because we never heard from Biden on so many different issues. We only heard from KJP. Well, think about it. That was it.
Yes.
Right?
That's exactly right.
Okay, we got Carl Cannon from Real Clear Politics coming up. He'll have some very interesting things, I think, to say about the AP and the way that the media is kind of managing this and covering it right now. I had noticed, and I think a lot of us have noticed, some Annie focuses quite a bit on Illinois. I don't give as much attention, but I do when the fat governor starts blabbing about stuff that he knows nothing about and just seems about as tone deaf as any Democrat out there. Jason Plummer, who is a state senator in Illinois, is going to highlight some of that in the next hour. Unfortunately, Fred, did you watch the Mizzou game over the weekend? You said you were at the Blues game, right?
Yeah, I was at the Blues game.
And that was the win on Saturday night.
Yeah, that was a good win.
So Mizzou goes to Vanderbilt, to Nashville. They should have won that game. That's going to go down as one of those games that they really should have had. Vanderbilt is red hot on fire right now, so it wasn't, you know, like they got taken down by a team that wasn't good. But you only have two left, and then the SEC tournament and on to the NCAA tournament. So there's a little bit more basketball left, and we'll talk with Cusimano about that as we move along this afternoon and some Blues stuff, because they lost last night, didn't they?
Right.
Right, and had they won,
but they had won
row,
four in a row.
Yeah, that's outstanding, and I think they were only slightly out of a playoff spot, which might have been affected by the game last night. Paul Morrow is here in the 5 o'clock hour. You know, we still have some questions and maybe a few answers emerging on Gene Hackman's death, so we'll get to that.
Oh,
and
good.
Bacci, I mentioned Bacci Ongar-Sargon is going to be here. She writes for the Free Press. She's one of my favorite reformed liberals. That's coming up. Plus, an audio cut of the day. We're off and rolling here, off and running for a Monday edition. Hang in there, Carl Cannon coming up next.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Down the halls of
You know, we got Fish Fry Fridays kicking off this Friday. We're very excited. Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church in the city of St. Louis. Then we go to Connellville, then to South County, Queen of All Saints on the 28th, Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on the 4th, Ott Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois.
Millstadt.
I keep doing that, right?
That's not right, but it looks like Millstadt. I get it.
I got to fix that, though. You're going to correct that with me. I'm going to figure it out maybe in the next 30 days. By the 11th of April, I'll have that nailed down. And then, you know, we got Kilmeade coming in a couple of weeks as well. Tickets still on sale at thefactory.com and briankilmeade.com. VIP tickets. So, of course, Friday was quite something with President Trump and J.D. Vance and Zelensky in the White House.
I want one thing to happen. I want...
Well, wait, I was going to play a cut of Friday first. Here it is.
I've empowered you to be a tough guy. And I don't think you'd be a tough guy without the United States. And your people are very brave. But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight it out.
So then today, here's what the president said.
I want one thing to happen. I want all of those young people to stop being killed. They're being killed by the thousands every single week. Last week, 2,700 were killed. 2,700 young, in this case, just about all young boys from Ukraine and from Russia. And that's not young people from the United States, but it's on a human basis. I want to see it stop.
Yep. Well, we'll see if it is going to stop. And I don't know that anything was really, you know, soothed over the weekend. We have Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics, back with us on this Monday afternoon. How are you, Carl? Happy Monday.
I'm good, my friend. How have you been?
I'm pretty good. What I saw on Friday, and I aired the audio, was quite something. None of us have really seen anything like that. So let's just kind of start with Friday afternoon's events in the White House with Zelensky. What was your reaction to that?
Well, my first reaction was, and look, you and I are in the media, Mark, but I thought maybe the reporters and the cameras shouldn't have been there. You know, there's a reason you conduct diplomacy behind closed doors. That's what I realized. Trump was irritated. I don't know why. And he got and Zelensky got irritated. And so they carped at each other. It wasn't their finest hour, to quote another statesman.
But don't you think, you know, because there's a lot of reaction to this. And here's, I'm just going to be honest with you. I liked it because, and I think that Trump indicated this during part of the event, that, you know, a lot of this stuff we don't see. It's not on full display, but for the American people to see this, I think, is quite illuminating and enlightening. Now, when it comes to cutting deals and diplomacy and all that, I get that you're supposed to do that behind closed doors, but there are a fair amount of people in this country, and I don't know, you know, what the term isolationist means anymore, Carl, outside of, you know, when you look at President Trump's policy of America first, and you look at how much money has been spent on this war. Now, the numbers, I think there's debatable numbers, but let's just say it's more than 120 million. Some people think, and Trump says $350 billion. I'm sorry. That's a lot of money. It's not just cash. It's arms, it's weapons, it's supplies. But I think a lot of people in November voted for some conditions on these loans and on these guarantees. And that's what was expressed on Friday. Now, it's not the prettiest way to get this done. And I don't know where this is going to take us, but I do think that the conversation represented a fair amount of where people are in this country.
Well, maybe, Mark. I like to give President Trump the benefit of the doubt on this because, as you imply, he people knew where he was. He wasn't full throated support of Ukraine like Joe Biden. He wasn't. But he's gone too far the other way. He implied that Ukraine had invaded Russia, which is just factually wrong. He called Zelensky a dictator, which is also not true. They had an election there. It seems to me he's letting his irritation get the better of him. And that scene in the Oval Office you described, I mean, he says, "I empowered you to be a tough guy." What did he empower? He wasn't in office. He keeps telling us, president, over and over again. I mean, he said it 100 times. That war wouldn't have started when I was president. I don't know if that's true or not. We'll never know. It's a counterfactual.
Right.
I don't know why he says it even. But it was the previous administration that put all this money in, and both houses of Congress, both parties in both houses of Congress. But J.D. Vance and President Trump saying that Zelensky ought to thank them was discordant. It didn't make any sense to me. And I don't understand his attitude. Insofar as, you know, that little snit in the Oval Office, I do agree with you. the American people, we haven't sent any soldiers there, but we sent a lot of money and a lot of material. And if people are getting, and Trump's idea seems to be these are wasted lives. These people are slaughtering each other and they got to stop. And when I hear that, you know, I think of the Sermon on the Mount. I think of us are the peacemakers. I mean, if he really wants to stop this carnage in a way that somehow preserves Ukrainian sovereignty, I mean, look, they're not going to do it, but they should give him the Nobel Peace Prize.
I guess from a lot of people's perspective, I can kind of simplify it this way, because I don't have a big brain when it comes to managing, you know, these big geopolitical situations. I don't know enough about it. I'm not going to claim to. But here's what I kind of believe, and maybe not all of this is true. I believe that a few years ago, there was an opportunity to maybe win this war. I no longer think that that's possible. So if the war is not winnable, it makes zero sense to me and to a lot of people to pour hundreds more billions into an effort here. Now, the other part of this, and I completely understand people saying, well, wait a second, what is Putin being asked to do here, right? There needs to be a negotiation. That's a valid concern. I don't know what the answer is there. But what I do know is if we're not going to end it, if Zelensky wants to keep fighting, if there's not going to be anything ceded, well, then the fighting is just going to continue. More people are going to die. And then where are we in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years? So it seems like an endless situation without a solution.
Well, you say that, but we've had troops in Korea, Mark, since 1950, and they're still there. And the idea is South Korea is still a country. You've had generations of Koreans grow up, live, die, have children, living in a free country. I mean, the war was never winnable in that way.
Why? Right, but we don't have U.S. troops to play here.
Adolf Hitler sent 40 divisions into Russia. They couldn't defeat the Russians. Russians are not going to lose a land war in their continent. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But you could have a stalemate, and then at some point, presumably, you've got to have peace talks. But Vladimir Putin has not given any indication that he's receptive to that. And I, you know, look, President Trump may know something we don't know about Putin. He may. But if he doesn't, you know, he could end up with nothing. He could end up as looking naive. I've got my fingers crossed here, Mark. Yeah. I hope for the best. But I think dealing with Putin is dealing with a very dangerous and unstable character.
Absolutely, I'm not going to deny that. I would agree with that. And I think a lot of people know that. I don't know where this takes us, but it certainly was interesting on Friday. So you know, this is all kind of draped around everything else that's going on in this country with Doge, and the freak out on Doge kind of continues. What do you make of the continued reaction on the left?
You know, a lot of these people, they're just going to oppose Donald Trump, whatever he does. And we can discount them. I mean, I don't mean that they're not loyal Americans and not sincere, but their minds aren't open, and we don't need to talk about them. But there's a lot of people who voted for Trump, millions of them, who are looking at this thing and saying, "Well, wait a minute. He didn't talk about this exactly during the campaign. He talked about DEI and immigration and inflation, but he didn't really say he was going to decimate the federal workforce. This seems to be coming from Elon Musk, and I think people are waiting to see if Elon Musk may have gotten the wrong idea. He took over Twitter, paid $40-something billion for it, laid off 75% of the workforce, and saw no demonization in service. And so now maybe that company was the all-time feather bedding outfit in history,
right.
But that, I don't know, is the federal government that way? Musk seems to think so. I don't know if there's any.
Don't you think, I know there's going to be some people that are going to, you know, the election was still very close, going to be very curious about this, question it. But I still feel, maybe this is my naivete, but there's a lot of us that are cheering this on and are
yes.
rooting for it, because we feel like there's never been an opportunity like this before. So I get the scorched earth is going to claim some victims. There's going to be some, you know, collateral damage, but
Mark, there's going to be veterans who got their job because they were combat veterans and had a preference, and they're going to be laid off. That's already happening.
Yeah,
think anybody voted for that.
No, nobody voted for that. That's what. So, are there things that perhaps need to be corrected? I would stipulate, yeah, that there are. But I think what they're finding is they don't know any way to go about this by, you know, doing it in reverse, where they can make sure that there's no casualties at first. But yeah, there's going to be, and I've said this before, Carl, there's going to be repercussions. I can't imagine that we don't have members of Congress right here in St. Louis that are getting an earful. Now, the problem is disseminating whether that earful is from organized this strategy from Democrats who are flooding town halls, or from, you know, people who are taxpayers who say, hey, wait, we voted for a lot of this, but we don't support this. And I do think there's a fair amount of that right now.
Well, there's, I'd say two things about that. And the first thing is, some of this will be answered presumably tomorrow night when he gives his State of the Union. That's not the State of the Union. The first annual joint address to a joint session of Congress. It's going to look like a State of the Union address. And I think he's going to lay this out. Elon Musk finally explained this in a way that you and I would be familiar with, but they just started doing this stuff and sort of said, well, we'll explain, you know, we'll tell you. Yeah, we'll tell you. They didn't say we'll tell you about it later. They acted like everybody understood that this was something that needed to be done, cutting the federal workforce, stopping this money from flowing out into the Treasury, that it was inflationary, that it was stupid, that it was crazy. They sort of assumed we said that. But finally, Elon Musk said, like a week ago, in that cabinet meeting at the White House, and he said, listen, we came in with a $2 trillion debt. That's unsustainable. That's going to bankrupt our country. You can't have a $2 trillion federal deficit every single year in peacetime. The federal debt's $36 trillion. There's no way to pay it back. It will bankrupt us. That's a good rap, and that's true. And I expect Trump will talk about this Tuesday night. That's the first half of it. The second half of it, though, is this really the right way to go about it, to have Elon Musk? You know, he's this genius, but he doesn't know everything about everything. Would it have been better to take a department like the VA or Small Business Administration? SBA is run by Kelly Loeffler, right? She had more success in business than Donald Trump ever did. Say, hey, Kelly, I want to report on my desk in 6 months. Can the SBA budget be cut in half? And if so, how do we do it? Maybe that would have been a better way to go about this.
Maybe, but I think what people might say is that, man, and you've been around for a long time, how many times do you see blue ribbon panels and commissions and recommendations and stuff like that? And
we're talking about orderly budgeting. Look, they cut the Clinton administration. I covered them. They cut $3 billion out in this RIGO thing, reinventing government. And it kind of lost steam. They lost their interest in it. But they actually proved you can do it. I don't say there's no fat in the government. We all know there's a lot, right? But I just... To do it in a way, and again, I'm not talking about what the Democrats are saying, because they're the loyal opposition. But this is you and I talking. There's an orderly process to budgeting, and Elon Musk is a kind of impatient guy who doesn't take that route. So look, maybe this will work. But in the meantime, you don't want to be firing people. You don't want to be firing people you don't know who they are or what they do.
Well, I'd say one thing about tomorrow night, and I've been talking about this for years, not just, you know, weeks or days, but there needs to be, and this is where I am concerned, there needs to be honesty about, you know, how much can actually be trimmed in order to affect the deficit. And there's no way to do it without addressing Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. And they have to be honest about that. And Republicans should be honest about that. I have to ask you one more question, though, on the topic of the media. Carl Cannon is here, Washington Bureau Chief. Obviously, there's been a bit of a dust up in that White House briefing room, the Correspondents Association not happy with this decision over the AP. You're kind of a longtime guy in Washington. You know how these things work. What do you say about this, Carl?
Well, I was president of the White House Correspondents Association, and we always worked out the White House pool. The White House wanted it. Every administration wanted us to do it. They certainly didn't want to have to do it. And we had an in-town pool rotation with about 30 news organizations that cover the place regularly. They go with the president where he goes. They brought in for these photo ops. It was a system that worked. And again, here's the issue. Donald Trump certainly is within his rights in his White House and his press shop to say, you know what, AP, Bloomberg, Reuters, okay, maybe, but because those are the guys that are there every day. But what about these other organizations that are more friendly to us? What alternative media? We want to look at expanding the idea of who gets to ask the president questions. I think that's healthy. I think it's good. I think they're well within their rights. And I personally would have been very supportive of that. That makes sense. But to kick AP out of the rotation, the pool rotation, because the brass at AP decided not to change Gulf of Mexico to Gulf of America, that's crazy. And they AP issued a very temperate statement. We understand both sides of this. We're not going to do it because we're an international organization and the rest of the world hasn't recognized this. And it's been called that for 400 years and the Mexicans don't want it. But we will acknowledge that President Trump calls it this. They made a very temperate sort of conciliatory statement, and it wasn't enough for Trump. And it makes me think they had another beef with the AP. I think they think AP, you know, went woke
but
a few years ago.
But I think that that's legit.
Dialbook encourages all this kind of thing, especially on transgender politics. I think there's a bigger issue.
Well, there is, though, but there should be a bigger issue. That's what people don't understand. Because, look, you can't convince me, because I've worked with the AP for 40 years. I've been on the board of the AP here in Missouri years ago. You can't convince me that they're an independent, non-biased news organization. That's sad, because they don't come off that way.
Well, they're independent, but they're the idea is they're no longer unbiased. That's the allegation, and there's some evidence for that.
Right. Absolutely. All right, Carl. Hey, thanks for joining me here on this Monday afternoon. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. Take care. I actually have I have a little audio from Julie Pace, who is in charge of the AP, that I'll share here in just a minute to kind of put an exclamation point on some of that stuff as well. Don't forget, we got a Monday edition of Sue's News after the top of the hour. You know, I love Carl Canning because I've known him for a long time. His dad was a legend in Washington. But I think what was on display there a little bit is what I mentioned earlier in the show. You're going to have a lot of insiders in Washington, even folks. Now, Carl's pretty much, he calls balls and strikes down the middle. I don't know that I agreed with everything that he said, but there is going to be an unwillingness to go about things the way that Trump is. And, you know, so I mentioned this. I kind of had it, and it ended up being okay. It wasn't ugly in the end. But I was kind of going back and forth with a friend this week about a lot of this stuff, who was very indignant about Elon's involvement. And one of the things that they were making the case for is that there's a lot of financial benefit that Musk will get in his companies through contracts with the government. So, okay, you laughed. No,
I
do. And I have the same reaction.
He is super rich. Yeah. He does not need it.
Your reaction is exactly the same as mine. But here's what I'll tell you, and this is what I was realizing. And this is what I had to tell my friend. I'm like, look, I get what you're saying, and I really do. I understand the complaints.
Sure.
I just think they're invalid because, and what I think is a little confusing to a lot of people on the other side is that there are some of us that really want this. Well, you don't understand how many federal workers will be, you know, affected here. You don't know what's going on. Why do you just want people to lose their jobs? You have no empathy, all this stuff. I'm like, okay, well, show me another way you can do this. Oh, we can take the 6 months and we can do the Blue Ribbon Panel and the recommendations, which will take 18
goodness.
Months. And by the time 18 months comes around, Congress has changed. No.
No.
No, 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 no. Well, there's no time for that.
There isn't. And this is to benefit everybody. It really is.
Well, they're not going to look at it that way. But I guess if you don't like, if you already have a just a minor little case of Trump derangement syndrome, and then you start looking at the way, don't forget the way the media covers this.
Oh,
because
that's true too.
They're not giving people of America a fair assessment of what's going on with this administration.
You're right. And in that podcast, we learned, just because you're interviewing Elon Musk, and you know, he said, well, the media, it might have even been AP, which is why I was having a fit when you were talking to him, who said, yep, Elon Musk, they have cut back on air traffic controllers. That was them. And he said, that's just not true.
Yeah.
We're trying to hire them. And in fact, a lot of old white guys were let go because of DEI from those positions. And we're trying to rehire them and say, hey, do you want to come back? Hey, we need to get more. So that was blatantly untrue.
Here's what I'd like to happen. And I know that, see, what they're going to say is, and to a certain extent, you have to allow for some of this because
sure.
Trump opens his mouth and he says, I'm going to fix everything on day one. And they're going to say, wait a second. But what would be so wrong with letting this play out for, I don't know, maybe till the end of the summer and saying that where we are? Because look, there's not going to be a lot of people that are going to support him if the stock market continues to go down, if the price of eggs and groceries is going to continue to spike. People are going to turn on this administration very quickly because the media will assist them in doing that. But wouldn't it be okay, instead of just Chicken Little, the sky is falling, all this other crap, to see what might happen and let the process go through?
It would. And the appeal to Musk is, not only does he not need the money, and the other part is that, and he knows computer systems and can go quickly and figure out what's happening. But also, he's not part of the establishment. He has no skin in the game other than to make things more efficient.
Okay, what I was told is that, and you know, there is something to this, that these guys who have all this money, well, they want to make more money, right? And you know, but I don't. This is where you have to look into the motivation of Elon Musk. Maybe I'm being fooled here, right? Maybe he's fooling those of us on this side. I sincerely believe he loves the country and he wants to do this, and he got involved with the race. Let's go back to the reason he got involved here, was to save the damn country.
Correct.
From what Biden and Harris wanted to do. I mean, let's just put it this way, and I would say this to Carl. I'll take any of what we're experiencing times 10 compared to the alternative.
Yes.
I mean, think about the alternative. Nothing would have been done. Nothing. What would have been done? Did you see the border crossing numbers?
It's insane
how much better they are. It's not even close. It's not even news anymore because they've
shut it down so well.
So then, how about this? This is like the Democrat Party puts this out on Twitter. What Democrats did in February, and they have a list of about like 50 things here that they did. Every House Democrat voted against Trump's budget that slashes Medicaid. House Democrats introduced a taxpayer data protection act to permanently protect the American people. And this goes on and on. Blah, blah, blah. People don't care about this stuff.
No.
They don't care about it. And you continue to be tone deaf. So, yeah, there's going to be some level of success with the American people when Trump and Republicans say, we're going to cut this, we're not going to do this. Really, a lot of it. And I was thinking about this in terms of Eric Schmidt. We had him on Friday, and I've looked at the situation with Schmidt and Trump from this perspective. And I've known Eric for a long time. I've known him since 2008. He was a friend. He was the official state senator of the show. Then he was the official state office holder. And he's willing to have a lot of fun, and he's a normal guy. I've described Senator Schmidt as a normal guy. There's a reason that Trump and Schmidt are close compared to Trump and Hawley. And how do you think Josh feels about all that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, he's got his own deal there and his own populist thing, but he's not tight with Trump. Schmidt is tight with Trump because a lot of this really is common sense. They look at it. Now, I had to, and sometimes I have to do this, I have to put myself in a situation where my lens, your lens, maybe our audience, the lens is different on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I allow for that. But what I say is, but hey, just for a second, kind of, I know you want to look at it from your side, and we can do that maybe. We understand some of your points. But look at it from our side right now. There's a complete and total unwillingness to do that. Not only with a fair portion of those on the left, and I think we heard some of this even on the roundtable on Friday, but certainly with the media. Certainly with the media, because they're not going to, and this is what frustrates me about the people that are going to complain about Elon and all these allegations, even the stuff with Zelensky and Russia. I mean, there's all kinds of claims being made. And I get the complaint about, well, what's Putin being asked to put up here? Well, I don't know all the particulars, right? And maybe there should be more pressure on him. And maybe there is more that we don't know of.
That's just it.
But here's what I do know. Okay. And I'm not very smart. It's not a smart guy. Here's what I do know. I know that hundreds and hundreds of billions of U.S. resources, dollars, and weapons have been flushed down the toilet. Let's say they're not even flushed down the toilet. Let's say that they were put to good use, right? But what we now know is you can't win that war. Okay. So then what's the answer? What's the answer from the other side, right? What is it? Keep fighting. No ceasefire. Let people die. 1,200 a day, whatever the number is.
They don't talk about it.
Let's get to another. Let's get to this point next year on the fourth anniversary. Let's get to 2026 in the midterms, or that is the midterms next year. I mean, what is the solution? Where is it going to end? I'm not saying bend over, give everything to Putin, but there's a reality here. And the reality is the cards that still need to be played that Zelensky didn't understand the other day. So we're going to see where this takes us. And we're going to continue talking about it. We'll have a little bit more on that topic after 5 o'clock with Paul Morrow and Batyangar Sargon.
Get more at 971talk.com.